Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Chris Cresswell, vocalist and guitarist of The Flatliners. The veteran Canadian quartet's latest album, Cold World, is out May 8th. Succinct, power-filled, and buoyed by unforgettable hooks and melodies, the LP demonstrates that there's no other band quite like The Flatliners, and that their creative powers continue only to improve. Cresswell recently discussed the friendships at the core of The Flatliners, crafting those unforgettable hooks, and why it's important to hold on to your early drafts of your writing. That's Chris Cresswell of The Flatliners on Into Music, coming up now. I'm a lyrics guy, so when I look at this, I see a lot of references to, like, things falling away, old things falling apart, new things emerging, but they're kind of oppressive, and they need to be beaten down.
There's a little, it's a bit of a violent album lyrically, I got to admit.
So was that kind of the headspace that you were in, just seeing kind of all these changes and going, I'm not sure that this is the best path, or maybe even though this is painful, this has to move forward, you know?
Yeah, I think both of those are true. It's always been my kind of style, I suppose, to write about the things around me that either, you know, get under my skin, confuse me, bewilder me, upset me, things like that. It's hard for me to write a song about the things that rock. It's hard for me to write a song about the things that are cool in life, you know? I'm not sure why that is. I think it's more interesting to me in my songwriter brain to kind of try to excavate, I guess, just try to search for the answers, you know what I mean? To the questions I have. And these days it's just easy to look around and see the planet falling apart environmentally and people treating each other terribly. And I think as an artist, it's part of, you know, our duty to report on the world around us. And when that world around us is a violent dystopian place at times, that's the kind of energy that I latch onto for some reason with writing, you know what I mean? Because I want to try to work through these feelings and use this outlet I have to try to express all that I'm feeling and all that I'm trying to work out. It's funny, this album Cold World is a bit of a continuation of our last album New Ruin. We've never really done that before. I think typically between albums there have been these musical twists and turns that occur that give each album their own identity. And I know this new record has its own identity, but it's thematically the most similar as like a follow-up, you know what I mean, to our previous record. And our previous record was about all the same stuff, man. So it's, you know, I think we're finding new ground musically and lyrically, but that's only because the world is just, and the universe is, it seems to be providing a lot of angry questions for me to ask.
When did you kind of know that, like, committing things to the page, writing them down, was something that was like a release for you? Did that come after the band started, or were you already doing that when you started playing music?
The band started when we were so young. We were 14, 15 years old when we started this band. So I'm a high school student playing in a band with my best friends, talking about the world around us. We've always been kind of that mindset, and I lyrically have always been in that mode, I suppose. And but it's funny, I still have all these old notebooks of lyrics and stuff that predate the band. I'd be writing lyrics to songs that didn't even truly exist, meaning there's no music behind it. It was just me writing out thoughts, but with a rhyme scheme, a lot of which would be pretty embarrassing to share now, but it's there, you know what I mean, for me to look back on and to ruminate on. And it's a great outlet to have. I mean, I know I'm fortunate to have it because the way my brain is wired to kind of pick up on and just, again, like kind of be a bit of a sponge, maybe, like a lot of artists are, to what's going on around them. If I didn't have this outlet, I'd be a different person, I'm sure of it, you know. But no, I've been doing it as long as I can remember, and as through doing it as long as I can remember, I can that release, that expression has always helped.
I ask because just yesterday I was reading the I read this article about how writing is really good for your brain and that you're doing all kinds of good things when you express your feelings through writing. So, to your point, yeah, you probably would be a different person just even on a chemical level.
I think so. I think so. Yeah, I've recently tried to get back to writing on a physical piece of paper with an actual pen. I mean, traveling so much in a band, we're just living in a modern world where you can write on your note app in your phone as much as possible. Like, it is all great, and I am fortunate to have that kind of ability to do that wherever I may be in the world. But it's also just kind of feel like a bit of a geek just on your phone all the time. Like, everyone's always on their phone. So I was doing some writing recently with a friend, and he was writing in a notebook, and I was there in the corner just typing away on my phone. And I'm thinking, I gotta get out of here. I gotta get back to the page. And it's but either way, the whichever medium that I'm writing in, it's so helpful to just get those thoughts out. And also, I really do love, whether it's on the page or in a little note app, keeping the scraps, you know what I mean? Like, even if when you start, I mean, it's been said before that, like, the hardest part about writing is just starting to write, you know what I mean? But then there is this writer's version of a runner's high, I feel like, where you get to a point where you're just kind of free flowing and things are working and your brain, your synapses are firing and your brain is working. And sometimes it takes a bit of an exercise to get through that. Sometimes you have to crawl through the Shawshank tunnel to get to that moment in the rain a little bit, you know what I mean? And it's always interesting to me to kind of use that as a bit of an exercise to just, like, get a few thoughts out, fragments, even if they don't really make sense. Then you see how things start to come together, whether if it's a song or if it's a story you're writing or whatever. But keep those scraps, you know what I mean? If it's in the note app, I typically would keep the lyrics intact for the song, how it's ended up being on the album. But then I can scroll down to the very bottom and see the other thoughts that were kind of kicking around in my brain at the bottom of that note. Same thing with the bottom of the page. So it's yeah, it just helps.
I wonder too, as a singer, I know some singers are kind of the approach of like it's like last minute when the lyrics come into view and they've got the right syllables and the right word choice. And then of course others go through all this kind of wild preparation so that when they get into the vocal booth, everything's there. Which approach do you kind of take?
I'd like to be like 90% prepared as a band going into the studio and, like, leave the door open for like 10% magic. I don't really like wasting people's time. I don't like wasting my friends and my bandmates' time. I don't like wasting, a studio engineer's time. We have a dear friend, Matt Snell, who we record everything with at home in Toronto, and he's like one of my favorite people and one of my favorite people to make records with, and I don't want to waste his time. I mean, with lyrics, I typically do have those pretty worked out ahead of time. At this point in the band's existence, if it's a demoing process we're doing to kind of share ideas, if I'm sharing those ideas that I have with the rest of the guys, I kind of wait until the lyrics are done, truly, to, like, share it. I think that's just because I want to give my buddies and my bandmates the best first impression I can, I also just, I really like going full rabbit hole on it to a point where I'm like, this is ready to share now. I try not to be too precious about it, but I am, I do go, I do take it pretty seriously. So with the lyrics, I'm usually pretty dialed. Musically, it's nice to keep the door open a crack just for a little magic. Yeah.
How often do like lyrics maybe spark like a musical idea, like you're saying, like the car spinning out of control in the lyric, and you're, oh, you know what we should do? We should try to replicate that here in this part of the song or something.
Yeah, that can happen for sure. I mean, honestly, the way in which the song comes together, there's no real method to the madness. Or maybe there's like five or six different methods to the madness, Sometimes it is just a lyric that I've scribbled down on a piece of paper or in my phone, you know what I mean? That then informs, if it's kind of an evocative, like some of these lyrics on Cold War, like kind of like a violent lyric, like, you could go one of two ways. You could go more than one of two ways, but I mean, one of the ways you could go is you could have that musical accompaniment attach itself and support that violent nature, that evocative nature, that impactful nature of the lyric. You can also go the other way and make the music very mellow and kind of, serene in that moment, and then hit them with this kind of like unfitting lyric over top. There's so many approaches, and honestly, that's one of my favorite things about writing music, is that over all these years the band's been together, now 24 years, there have been so many different ways songs have come together. It could be that Paul has a drum beat that we start with. It could be that John has a cool bass line that we want to play somewhere. It could be that Scott has a riff. It could be that I have a lyric. There's no bad way to start. You know what I mean? So the way it all adds up is always like kind of a bit of beautiful chaos. You know what I mean? It's hard to answer that question in a solid way, because there's so many options. Yeah. But that's the best part.
Yeah, well, and the fact that after all that time, you're not individually or collectively stagnating, that it's like, hey, we can try this, as opposed to like,
Whatever we did last time, just more of that.
Yeah, totally. I think we're lucky to have each other in this band. We've all been friends since before the band started. And again, the band started when we were 14, 15 years old. So we're all childhood friends. Like, this is essentially our high school band that we've stuck with, and we've stuck with each other, and we've stuck with this band. And we've just continued to try to push ourselves musically, but it's not even in an effort to, there's not a lot of a conversation about the effort being put in. The effort is just kind of put in, because it's still the four of us, I think. And it's just, there's almost this telekinetic way of communicating now with music with us, which is, I think we've been able to take some chances with music over the years, but it's never really discussed. It's just what feels right in the moment. And then when you add that new idea up against the back catalog, maybe it feels a little different, but I think it also still feels like us. So it's, yeah, I, there's not, there, it's not often we're like, ah, let's just do the thing we did last time.
When you're starting that band at like 14, obviously at some point, not everybody's skills are matching up, right? I mean, maybe somebody's slightly better at something, and then you kind of all get on the one page. What was that like to like just say like, okay, maybe this person isn't progressing the way I am, but I'm gonna hang in there with them because they're my friend and we're gonna push through this,
Yeah, I think us being friends first definitely takes us miles beyond where we'd maybe be as a band if we weren't friends first. There's so much like peace and love and understanding and just kind of family vibe at this point, being so deep into it, that yeah, I mean, like, it's, we're all human beings, so we all have our flaws and shortcomings and our strengths and our like moments of glory and all these things. I will say that he's always been such a talented musician, truly, but our bass player John probably had the biggest uphill battle, only because we started this band as kids. What kids do when they start a band typically is, what we did is at recess one day, you know what I mean? This is now technically a couple years before the band truly started, but you always have that version of like the band, quote unquote, before it really begins, right? When you're just li listening to music, you come up with a name, you never write a song, you know what I mean? But you're in a band. So this is a couple years before the Flatliners started. We would have been in recess, and Scott, our guitar player, called playing guitar. He's like, I got guitar at recess. And then I called guitar next. And I said, I want to play guitar too. And then John, who our bass player, who also wanted to play guitar, said, well, I guess I'll play bass. I feel like it's the origin story of so many bass players, and I hope that it's not a tragedy for most of those bass players. I know for a fact that John has now become one of the best. He's so good. He is just like this incredibly talented musician to begin with, like I said, but he's made the bass guitar his own. He also plays a five-string bass, which in our corner of like the punk world at first was kind of, had people scratching their head a little bit, but then you get that low B, and you can make even like the poppiest moment of a punk song sound kind of gnarly and dark and low, and it's a bit of a superpower of his, honestly. But yeah, I don't know if that truly answers your question, but I feel like that's the closest I can get of like, we have witnessed him blossom into this incredible bass player after starting out in this band being like, I guess I'm the bass player.
Yeah. Well, and you've been around each other enough too that you've seen maybe like different influences arise and things like that. Like somebody has their, you know, hip hop period or their prog period or something.
Totally. Oh my God. Absolutely. We've kind of run the gamut of all that stuff. You know what I mean? And it's funny now when you get to the age of, you know, we're in our like late 30s where it's probably not the same age for everyone, but I think a lot of music fans have this moment in their life where they just kind of, it's like going home again to all the stuff you listened to as a kid. Nostalgia is a powerful drug. You know what I mean? And it's just, if you jump in Scott's car, he's probably listening to Wilco. He might be listening to some John Reese, you know, Rocker from the Crypt, Hot Snakes, Drive Like Jehu, anything like that. John is an unapologetic fan of nu metal. You know what I mean? And I love it because like we were of that age where when that was happening, like that's when we were starting to like music. I mean, myself, like it might surprise people that I mean, I'm an avid punk listener as a punk songwriter and punk band member, but there's a lot of stuff on the lighter side I really enjoy as well. You know, like our drummer Paul has just recently in the last like couple years, like really fallen in love with Soundgarden. I think it was like they were always there, obviously, for him, but he liked the hits, but he's just taken this super deep dive on them lately. So there's just, you know, it's I mean, my older brother is a house music DJ, you know what I mean? So there's, and my mom was a church choir singer and piano player. My grandmother was a church organist. There's just like there's a lot of different musical tastes and kind of entry points floating around this band's existence. I think it's the same for every band. You know, I think just the members of these bands, ours included, like you kind of pick a bit of a lane when you start, right? Because we were teenagers, so we were listening to punk, we were listening to ska, we were listening to hardcore, we were listening to metal. And yeah, then that all formulates into like the early sound. Now, all these years later, we're able to just kind of liberate ourselves musically and like do whatever we'd like. As long as it sounds like us. Sorry. I think as long as it's us doing it, it will sound like us.
You know, I'm curious because listening to the album, in as far as I can tell, everything on here is something that could be played live. Is that kind of the approach that you take? Is like, it's the four of us, whatever we do, this is, we want it to, you know, have that possibility as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so much of this band's life is on the road. You know what I mean? I would say the majority of it is. So that is always in the back of our mind, you know. There have been times where that is in mind, but the approach has kind of been fumbled. We have a record that this record came out in 2013, Dead Language. It's our fourth record. And at the time we made this record, the band did not have a PA system in our jam space. I was living with roommates who had day jobs, and I was a bartender and a waiter at a restaurant. So I would be writing my vocal ideas to like an acoustic or an unplugged electric guitar at night, or, you know, the early hours of the morning when I get home from work, but I don't want to bug my roommates. So I was kind of whisper singing falsetto through all these ideas. And we didn't have a PA system at the jam space either. So when we got to jamming, like I didn't really ever try to sing it out loud at the jam space, because why would I? There's no microphone really to sing through. So I didn't really try to sing these songs for real until I got in the vocal booth to finish making that record, Dead Language. And all of it is so high and so out of my vocal range at that point that was a huge learning curve and a big like learning moment for me about which keys my voice works well in. This is years ago too. I mean, we started young, so we're growing up on albums, so like your voice changes over time. So that will always kind of evolve, but that was a huge mistake. And luckily I've come to a place where I can do a bunch of those songs now. But since then, this is a handful of records ago, that's always in the forefront of my mind is like the key first. I think it should fit the key that my voice sounds really good in, as long as we're not having to tailor any guitar parts that have open strings or interesting kind of parts like that to a place where they're not as easy to play on the guitar. You know what I mean? So there's a couple caveats to it, but yeah, it's I think the soul of the song is on the album, you know, but the life of the song is on the road. So I think like that's really something we keep in mind. And it's an incredible feeling to play a new song you've worked on for X many months, or maybe a year or years, maybe finally live, you know, and have people sing it back to you. And then it just snowballs from there. And if you keep it in the set and people keep singing along, it's a good thing that you kind of took the time and care to to consider that rather than like labor through it every time you sing it, like we did a few records ago.
Well, you know, on that singing along thing, of course, hooks are big in these songs, and hooks aren't always easy to write. I imagine there are probably times where it's like, you know, I thought that was a good idea,
Yeah,
but.
it's true. Yeah, I mean, having the luxury of time is something that has really served our band well over the years. There's a bit of, I mean, it's a bit of why, you know, we're not putting records out every 2 years or every year and a half or something like that. That's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of work to write and record an album, to mix it. I mean, there's so many people. It's like putting a little independent film together. You know what I mean? Like you're doing it on a budget, and there's so many more people touching this thing than just us in the band. And yeah, I think that all that time is really afforded us to just like make the right decisions, I guess, in the end. It is always fun going back if it's like a voice note on your phone or like, you know, a GarageBand or Logic or Pro Tools kind of session, whatever it is, however you're recording your ideas, to go back and listen to like the original hook idea, maybe, right? And yeah, exactly like you said, you think like, I remember sometimes listening back to these ideas, I can take myself back to that moment and be like, this is it. Whoa, this is the best thing I've ever written. And then a week later, I'm like, oh, that's trash. Like, we can do better than that. So I love that. I love having a bit of an archive of that kind of stuff. And it's fun sharing it with fans of the band. And just kind of, there's always a little magic in there too. You never know. It's good to hold on to all that stuff, I think, as a songwriter, because some of that stuff you could use for something else later. You know what I mean? Maybe even more time passes and you go all the way around the horn and realize that is actually a pretty good idea. It just wasn't the one for this song. You know? So there are no bad ideas. There are just some that are, for a hook, especially, a little catchier than others.
How long does it take, like after a record comes out, before you feel like you're on tour and you feel like, okay, the audience, now they know the material and now they're really feeding it, you know, in with us on these new songs?
Gotta say, the last couple records, and this is including the two songs we put out from Cold World at the time of this interview, we've been really blown away by our fans, like really riding with us like quick on the new stuff, you know. It's incredible. Typically in the past, yeah, it would be you'd put a few singles out before the record and then it would come out, and then after a couple months of touring, then you start to realize like, okay, people don't want to just hear the old stuff that they're familiar with. They're excited to hear these new songs. Now, we played a show the other night in Winnipeg, the day after we'd put a new song out, and people were singing along, you know, to the new song. It was incredible to see. And it was the same with our last album, New Ruin, that came out summer of 22. I remember the first show we played after it came out was in Europe. We were in Cologne, I want to say. And yeah, people were singing along to like every word of a couple of the new songs. For a band as deep in as we are, you know, 20 plus years, it's a really great feeling, because you do kind of at that age of a band run the risk, let's call it, of like sinking into being like a legacy band. To me, as a musician, there's nothing wrong being a legacy band, because that means that you have a legacy of music people like. That's a beautiful thing. But there's also this, you know, you're this push and pull and this balance of still wanting to be putting out records with your friends. And to us, it's always wanting to put out our best work, you know. So it's always incredible for us to see people really latching on quickly to the new stuff. I think maybe that's just a product of the age we live in, where like everything is so accessible, you know what I mean? Not only is the song accessible at your fingertips no matter what you're doing at any point in the day, as long as you have your phone with you, you know what I mean? But also like the lyrics are there. If they haven't been released by the band, you can probably look them up and someone's posted them somewhere. You know, or it's in the video of the new song. All these things help, I think. You know, it's just there's a culture now of accessibility that can be very overwhelming, but also in this environment, it can make for a really special moment at the live show, because everyone's in on the joke, you know.
I wanted to ask you specifically about Inner Peace. There's part of this that's got this cadence that's almost like Devo's Whip It. Do you know
Oh,
what I'm
cool.
talking about? Where you're like, duh, duh, you know? And that to me was like, I was like, oh, well, that's like a obvious live song because you can really get the crowd kind of into that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the one we played in Winnipeg that we put out last week, and people were like really, really into already, which was so cool to see. Thank you for the Devo comparison. That's very sweet of you. I mean, yeah, like that song is it turned out great. It's one of those songs that somehow kind of fell out of us in an afternoon, you know? Incredible when that happens. I mean, sometimes you, like I said, you labor so hard over something and then other ones just kind of happen. I think that song is just born out of our love for, obviously there's like, to me, there's an element of like Philly kind of East Coast 90s, early 2000s punk, Jersey punk, Lifetime, Kid Dynamite, stuff like that. But there, the verses, there's a lot of post-punk, there's a lot of new wave influence there, you know what I mean? I mean, I think Devo is a very, very wonderful compliment you've paid us. I think, like, you know, there's, I hear a little Gang of Four in there. I'm a big fan. And you see their influence in a band like Idols, for instance, now, who are one of the biggest bands in the world, especially in the punk world, post-punk world. They're like lighting things on fire, and I'm a huge fan of theirs. And it's that's they definitely have their influence on me as a songwriter now, because I just really love what they do. And there's something really fun about not worrying too much about the melody in the verse and just barking through that 30 seconds or whatever it is until you get to the hook. That's this big euphoric kind of sunny spot, you know, even though the lyrics are talking about, you know, watch the rot grow from within and stuff like that. That's a good example of what we were talking about earlier, right? Of like this like euphoric sunny spot with this dark lyric, which I really do love to do. It's a fun song about like a really not fun thing, which is just like this indoctrination and the swirls of capitalism and just how it feels like the world is falling apart and there's a bill to pay for it and all this stuff. It's just these big feelings, I think, deserve and require a big energy to the song. Even though that song's 2.5 minutes, it's got a big energy and it's fun to pack all of that into 2.5 minutes and just leave it all on the floor when we play it live. It's a powerful feeling, you know what I mean? Not only playing that song, but just when you can pull that kind of when you can pull that move off with it with a new song, it feels good when people reciprocate that energy live.
Did Gang of Four, when they toured last year, did they come anywhere near you? Were you able to see them last year?
I don't think they did come up to Toronto. If they did, I typically fall victim to the shows I want to see happening like the day after I leave for tour or the day before I get home. So if they did, I almost like probably just like didn't look at the dates because like I'm gonna be away all year. It doesn't matter.
Well,
I've never seen them though. I've never seen them.
oh man, I went and they were here just a couple blocks from where I'm at, but I mean it's the same thing, right? Like I'm at the show and they're playing "I Love a Man in Uniform" and people are dancing and I'm like, this is a song about fascism.
I love this move. I love this move of pulling the wool over, or like playing kind of a, it's almost like a musical prank. You know what I mean? You get this whole audience to sing along to a song that you as a songwriter truly believe in and want to share these feelings. But you can make, if you can make it danceable, then even better. Yeah. Yeah.
You're just talking about the friendship thing again and the years that you've been together. How much do you kind of like ever get to talk to younger bands about like where they're at and you know how things are going with them?
I think at this point in our career, if I could be so bold to call it that, we have just entered our elder statesman years potentially. Maybe we're knocking on the door of that. I'm not sure, but it's always really interesting to talk to newer bands that are out there doing it these days. A lot has changed since we were in their shoes, but a lot is also the same, you know? Like the my main piece of advice is still the same, which is just like don't be a dick, you know, just be cool to people. There, like I said, with making an album, it's also true with touring. Like there's so many more people involved in what happens at each and every show that happens on the planet, more than just the band on stage, right? I mean, it's most of the work is done by people not on the stage, not under those lights, not on the stage in front of you. So yeah, I think my advice remains the same. I do get really nostalgic and feel a little romantic about the era in which we came up, because it was like early cell phone, not pre, but early cell phone. We were traveling using a map, using an atlas, all these kinds of things. It was so tangible and tactile. And like that experience is one that is not only mine. It's everyone's in the bands, and it's everyone of that era. It's not completely unique, but because of the tangibility, it feels so unique, if that makes sense. Yeah, I think just it's there are pros and cons about coming up now. I mean, there's like you've never had more of an ability to stay connected, to get connected, to be connected with your fans, with your audience, with your team. If you've got a team of people working with the band, like all these things, there's also a lot of distraction out there. You know what I mean? So there's always a balance with all these things. And I don't mean to come off like an old dude who like hates a cell phone, like but it's the one thing I've noticed, or I'm curious about actually mostly, is how the bill at a show these days, like a local show full of like local bands, I wonder how the bill is stacked up. Because when we were starting, we started as more of like a ska punk band, and we'd play shows with punk bands, with metal bands, with hardcore bands, with full blown like traditional like kind of roots reggae bands too. And it was just a really great time, I think, and place in Southern Ontario, because there's so many towns to play in, to come up in. I wonder if it's still like that now. I gotta ask some younger bands I know, and if it's not like that, gotta get back to that, man. Like, you can't go to a show where every band sounds the exact same. That's so boring. It's like you're just flossing a dead horse, you know what I mean?
You've been listening to a conversation with Chris Cresswell of the Flatliners. The band's new album, Cold World, is out May 8th. You can learn more about the group, including current tour dates, at theflatliners.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.